This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you very much. Dennis and I are here to talk about party animals and the evolution of. And unfortunately, I did this presentation in Office 2007, and when I saved it back so it would show on this computer, things get a little wonky with the type and stuff. So thanks to Microsoft for making everything so nice and compatible. Anyway, you know, in lean times and good times, no matter what you do, when times are good, you have parties, and when times are bad, you have parties. So that's kind of how Dennis and I got started with this this party business. So we're going to use Charles Darwin as our, you know, our theory expert here, and he's going to join the party as well. So just to get started, give you a brief overview of the timeline kind of thing. It's compressed into about 10 years, this evolutionary thing. And thanks to Rob for planting the seed. He was the guy that came up with, can you do a speech on the evolution of the party animal? And I was like, yeah, I think we could. Even though a lot of you have heard this story before or heard these stories before, we're gonna try to give you a little bit of fresh idea here. So here's the Windows 2003 version of my 2007 thing where everything's kind of running together. But anyway, so you've got Party Animal in 87, and again, I preface this by saying, excuse me if I missed on some of the dates because, you know, I remember things, but you guys are the date experts a lot of times, so I may be off once in a while, and we can talk about that later. But anyway, so you got Party Animal right at the end of Bally's Ice Age, and we'll get into that in a little bit. And then you've got When Worlds Collide there in 1988, Party Monsters, Dr. Dude, Party Zone, Scared Stiff, and we'll move forward. Okay, so before the party, I'll let Dennis talk. But basically, he came to Bally with a new approach to cabinet design.
Yeah, when I was in college, I designed a futuristic pinball cabinet. And during the second quarter of my senior year, I had to have back surgery, and I couldn't take my college courses again for a year. So I built a full-size cabinet, and I brought it out to Bally, and I got hired at the Bally Pinball Division. And that's when I met Greg and all these other designers, Jim Patla, Greg Kamek, Gary Gayton. And so my first game, so I did cabinets for Rapid Fire and 8 Ball Deluxe Limited Edition. Then I got laid off. And then I came back to Bally, and my first game was Special Force. And I used up all my good ideas on that game, and when I had to design my second game, that was the hardest game I ever designed, because everybody's got one good pinball game in them, and coming up with another game, that was very difficult for me. After that, it got a little easier, but I didn't know what I was going to do, so Greg and I talked, and Greg had this party animal idea.
All right, we'll go from there. And, oh, by the way, he invented bowling from tables. On a binge weekend, I think that was. My background before the party started was I was hired in 78 at Bally, worked there, did quite a number of games, Harlem Globetrotters, Rolling Stones, Fathom, among others. And so by 1986, we were getting busy trying to prop up Bally as far as their pinball division. So I ended up doing like 3 different games in 1 year, which was, I think, a record for me. And plus, my family started. My first daughter was born in 1986. So it was a busy year for me, to say the least. I also started sticking in more than my 2 cents worth of design ideas at this point in time, too. So, and here it is 30 years later, and I still can't fix my own pinball machine. So here's the beginning of Bally's Ice Age. Bally and Bally Midway were kind of like Party Central. There was a lot of success in pinball in the late 70s, and then Pac-Man came on board, and basically this little pictogram here in the center sums it up. Pac-Man plus stacks of cash equal Bally Total Fitness, Fitness Machines, and Six Flags. So they took all the money that they made from Pac-Man and other things and invested it into all these other businesses and kind of left games in the dust, so to speak. So that's just my opinion. These are expressed opinions of myself. So anyway, and meanwhile, you know, Williams was doing their best to make sure that their emphasis stayed in pinball. So, and we're on the verge of this competing with Premier's photo games. And my pictogram here sums that up with games like Raven and Hardbody, the visual aspect of them leading to that. So now we got, we're in survival mode over at Bally Midway. We're just trying to do everything we can. We got high speed going on, you know, over at Williams. So Dennis got rehired. We brought Pat McMahon back on board. He had gotten laid off in the 84 layoffs. And Dan Langlois was actually starting to do some interesting things with pinball, and Strange Science was the result of that. So the climate was just beginning to change at this point. Greg's proposal to Greg, that's all supposed to be on one line, but anyway, there's my 2 cents. I brought it up to Greg Kamik. He was working on a game called DEFCON 6, and to me, it was kind of a heavy theme, you know, and I said, Greg, maybe we can change those letters on the playfield. If you were here for Roger's talk last night, letters on the playfield, you know, that's an important thing back in those days. You can change those around, make them something different. So anyway, I proposed a lighthearted, with animals, acting human, and he politely declined and said, Williams isn't doing that. And I said, but in the future they might, so let's be the first. Actually, that's not true, but... So I was determined to find a designer that would understand this theme. And so
I said, duh, I'll do it.
Yeah, he sure did. Wow, even my pictogram got screwed up on this one. So it's Dennis plus me plus Pat McMahon plus the DEFCON 6 came from Party Animals. So who are these? What was the major influences? So the major influences was Bally. I mean, Bally was party central. When Bally had a party for distributors and operators, they had shrimp the size of my forearm, and it was just like amazing. And Pac-Man bought a lot of parties. So plus, employees, we are having our own parties on the side. So the falling of Skylab created its own party. We call it the end of the world party, and we all wore helmets to make sure we'd survive. Another round of layoffs, we came up with the Come On, I Want a Layoff party. So all sorts of fun stuff like that. Female mud wrestling at corporate parties. It was just crazy days. And so this influenced us into the party realm. And, of course, the best damn educational film ever, Animal House, was a major influence. And, of course, radio in Chicago back in the late 70s and 80s was pretty strong with Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer and Jonathan Brandmeier. All these people were big influences on us, and they were all about the party. Plus, in 86, the Bears won the Super Bowl. Chicago hadn't seen any kind of party like that for a long time, especially in the sports realm. So all these influences came together, the best jukebox ever made, and we were still getting our butts kicked by Williams over there. So we came up with Party Animal. This is Pat McMahon's first sketch for Party Animal, and that's the finished. And then for all the Chicago people here, obviously all these influences that I talked about really mean nothing to anybody, but all those influences came together, and we've got, you know, Buzz Killman with a harmonica, and we've got Jim McMahon's jersey number on the bear carrying the keg. So all those things came together. Oh, and Joe Walsh's phrase.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I have an important part in this presentation.
So, yeah, go.
I'm done.
So, anyway, there it is. There's the play field. There's the jukebox as the focal point.
Yeah, the jukebox is Golden Age jukebox has always appealed to me aesthetically. And my idea for putting that in the game was, up to this point, you had to listen to the background music that was in the game. I thought it would be fun to choose your own background music, and that's the reason for the jukebox. You could pick whatever background music you wanted. Unfortunately, our sound system was so bad at that time that they all sounded alike anyway. And so the theme of the game was, I tried to figure out, what does a party animal do? So what you do in this game is, it's just a simple, fun little game. You eat pizza, drink beer, and chase women. If you saw Steve's presentation last night, he had a lot of firsts that he accomplished in pinball, and I thought, and he was very innovative with a lot of things, and I tried to think, gee, have I done any firsts? What have I done? And so now I remembered, I'm so proud of Party Animal because it was the first game to belch and have a toilet flush. So I got that going for me.
So Dennis went on and designed Blackwater 100 after that.
Yeah.
And a very innovative game. It got some attention at the trade show and that we took it to. There you go. And then I worked on a couple other projects, including Hard Buddy. And then, in 1988, this was the cataclysmic event. This was the thing in Darwinian, terms of when evolution can, like, expand exponentially. So, if that makes any sense. So, anyway, we got over to Williams, and it was as if we were welcomed so well that it was as if it's the same as fish growing limbs. I mean, we were from where we were at Bally, and we came to Williams. It was like we were given all sorts of opportunities to get out of that muck and move forward. So we were very appreciative of Williams moving in to take over. So that was fun. So anyway, when the cosmic dust settles after that cataclysmic event, a licensed opportunity arose. And if you were here for Roger's seminar last night, we talked a bit, or Roger talked a bit about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This was a license that could have been available, and we had talked about it, and it was one of those things where I wasn't sure if it was right for pinball at the time, but what do I know? And so, Dennis had already designed the Whitewood for Dr. Dude at that point.
Well, at that point,
it wasn't Dr. Dude yet, but
it was Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, it was a spinning disc, and that was going to be
some kind of machine that the turtles had to destroy. That was the idea of the disc then.
So Dennis said, well, if we don't do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what if we just did a comic book theme with a whole comic book storyline on the back glass? And I was like, well, that's pretty challenging. So, and he said, what about,
I didn't know Dr. Doom was a comic.
Right.
So I thought, what if we call it Dr. Doom and it's this terrible machine he's invented and your mission is to destroy that machine? The machine I'm talking about is a spinning disc in Party Animal with the targets surrounding it.
But at this point, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
At this point, that's when Roger came back upstairs to engineering and had the Elvira license in his pocket. He walked up to engineering and said, we've got this license. It's open to anybody who wants it. And Dennis said, yeah, why not? So the party evolved with Elvira. So we put together a bit of a presentation because she's kind of a California girl. She's kind of, You know, back then, she wasn't doing as much of the big advertising for Coors Beer and stuff that she eventually did. So she was a bit regional in her, you know, the way she was known. So we kind of had to put a quick presentation together to sell it to upper management. So. Oh, yeah. Joe Dillon, when we came over from Bally to Williams, Joe Dillon felt that the Bally look was important to keep for the Bally games. And his vision of the Bally look kind of just centered around two things. But and thus, Truck Stop came out of that vision. So when Elvira came along, it was kind of a natural.
She had the perfect two things.
Yeah, it's kind of a natural. So by natural selection, it belonged to Bally. So, and I should say at this point in time, too, that when we got that Elvira license through Roger, it was his first license. He brought that up last night. It was as if he had been doing that his whole life. I would have never guessed at that point in time that that was the first license he ever acquired. It was smooth. It was like silk. I mean, so kudos to Roger for bringing in a license to Williams, who had never really spent much time licensing before. So we sketched up some results from our brainstorm session. And we had some fun with it and took things to extreme, of course. And after we got Neil laughing at a few ideas, I think they bought into it pretty well, and we were able to start the game, start the party, so to speak. So we decided to dismiss her background as a movie show hostess. And just go with the party. And fortunately, she was great to work with, and she bought into that whole thing very, very easily. She was a big pinball fan to begin with, so that helped. And then Dennis started designing stuff, like the ramps. I mean, Blackwater was a huge influence for that, right?
Yeah, Blackwater, I think, was the first ramp that went downhill and then back uphill. So I wanted to. I always like to watch the ball moving in fun different ways instead of just speeding around a ramp and coming right back. To me, it's just more fun to watch. So that's why the ramp has the downhill, uphill, and it's very curvy and wiggly. And the name Monster Slide was the perfect name for that.
And then obviously the Boogeyman.
And the Boogeyman, that was something that I had bought at a drugstore or a Halloween store. Years ago, even before I got into playing pinball, I thought, wow, these might be cool on a pinball game somehow. So when Elvira came along, we figured out a way to put them in.
And jumper bumpers, that was kind of new.
That was kind of new. Again, I was just looking for more free action, as I called it, almost free, because you got motion and movement that you could see from something that was already there moving that was basically hidden most of the time, which was the bumper ring. So I thought, well, if you attach the cap to the ring, you can get some more motion that way.
And these people I just went around with a camera and started taking pictures of people in poses for the back glass, so I thought I'd include a few folks. That's Dennis with the sunglasses on, and Jim Patla pouring himself a glass of wine. And
if you look on the back glass, that shot of Jim Patla looks just like the shot on the back line.
It's pretty accurate. And then there was a break in the action. Dennis got broken. You've heard that story before. He got broken at 65 miles an hour on his dirt bike. He was hospitalized for months, and I thought it was weeks, but I guess it was months.
It was months. I was in traction for 3 months because they took me down to. I broke my femur. They took me down to surgery. And then the doctor realized he didn't have a pin long enough and narrow enough to fit in my leg. And then he found out the pin manufacturer wouldn't guarantee one to go in my leg, so I had to sit in traction for 3 months in the same room.
Didn't you go to
the same pink room?
Did he go to a pinball supplier for that pin? Right. So while he was hanging there with his leg up in the air, me and Mark Panaccio would go to the hospital every night with updates while the morphine drip was going. And we'd be like, so, Dennis, what do you think of this? And he'd be like, huh? And we'd be like, excellent. So he was very accommodating through all that time. And we also got a lot of support from Jim Patla and the both Ritchie brothers. The entire engineering staff really pitched in and came together.
The Whitewood was essentially finished when I crashed, but so there were still refinements that needed to be done on the drawing. Switches need to be put in for where the multi-balls are stored. I think Steve worked on that part. Greg and Jim Patla took over the managing of the whole team, and everybody came together, and it was I was very happy that Steve and Mark contributed a lot.
Yep, and we made it to the show despite Dennis's riding skills, and it was a success. And Roger and I were just talking out in the hall earlier. You know, here's Roger, like right over on the left-hand side here. He's just beaming. Because this was like, this worked. Everything came together, and it was just an amazing point in time. And we got best new equipment at that show, and it was the first time for pinball in, I think, 7 years. I could be wrong on that, but it was a monster reception, to say the least. And it was, as you can see by the throngs of people that was waiting for Elvira's autograph. So it worked. Everything came together. So, you know, what a team, what a party. You know, we had a great team. And I put Roger up in the team only because, I mean, this was pivotal. Pivotal that he was able to bring licensing back again. And then the history of that from then until now is just amazing. So, once again, thanks, Roger. And then everybody else that, you know, pitched in, of course.
Elvira was, I think, the easiest license that we ever worked on. She was so great to work with, so nice. Didn't mind saying all the risque things we asked her to say.
And what the first game wasn't as risque.
As risque as Scared Stiff.
That's just kind of a composite of some of the stuff. Dennis brought that part of a comic book to my office and said, hey, we should do an entrance to the area called a, you know, like a skull entrance. So he brought that as an influence for the skull entrance, and I think Jack Hager sculpted it. He was a video game designer, and he helped out with the sculpting of that. So after this you know, celebration, we went back to what we were working on before we got started, and Dennis had a finer appreciation for doctors and nurses by this time. So it was kind of befitting that we go with a doctor theme. So Dr. Doom became Dr. Dude, and we presented some crazy sketches at an engineering meeting. And all I took away from that meeting was Steve Kordick sitting on the other side of the table. And he said, what the hell are you guys talking about? But by the end of the meeting, Steve blessed the project. He said, you know what? Go ahead. Let's see what happens. So thanks, Steve, for letting us take this strange idea to the next level. It truly was a cacophony of external influences. When you think about it, there's a bit of David and Goliath involved. There's Mad Magazine, which I was totally influenced by as a kid. I've said this before. It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's The Nutty Professor, which is the same story. And, of course, at that point in time, Bill and Ted were very popular with their Excellent Adventure. So, obviously, that you can start to see how this kind of came together. And it wasn't just an effect from his morphine drip, so... and After Effects. So. Oh, and there's one more influence. There was a weird little movie that came out with Jim Carrey and a bunch of other people, Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, called Earth Girls Are Easy. And so the line, Dr. Dude, was actually spoken in that movie. So, this was all science. This really wasn't a party anymore, but it was its own story. And I was going to hopefully take this maybe into a comic book. And I had started thinking about in those terms, and started thinking about Dr. Dude's past, his future, his who are his friends, who are his enemies. And so it started all to kind of come together from that standpoint. So these are some of the early things that you saw on the playfield, those clay sculptures that Jerry Pinsler was working on for The Gift of Gab and for The Big Shot. And early on, we've got Trog placeholding for The Big Shot, because we didn't have The Big Shot yet. And I believe, Dennis, this early version of the Mixmaster, was that made out of Nordmanite?
It was made out of styrene.
Styrene, okay.
Nordmanite is Steve Ritchie's term for foam core, because I use a lot of foam core building mock-ups. And
in fact, you can, if you've never seen a Nordmanite mock-up, I think there's one on the floor, right?
Jim Shelberg has my Whitewater mock-up that I built. That game had so many layers and levels that I was having difficulty trying to draw it, so I built a model of it first just so I could make sure I had clearances for the ball. And it's kind of falling apart now, but Jim has it in his booth.
So we brought Dr. Dude to the New Orleans AMOA show in 1990 and went right up against Bart Simpson. But we got autographs and handshaking and pictures, so that helped. But I think Bart beat us in the sales numbers. And then the influence came full circle. Jonathan Brandmeier, who I mentioned earlier, Chicago radio personality, came to Roger, and said, hey, I need a pinball machine for my new TV show. And so we accommodated him, and we kind of retrofitted Dr. Dude with Dr. Johnny Lovedart, one of his characters on his show, and put that together for him. He got the pinball machine, but he didn't get the TV show. I think he had a one-shot TV show, and then that was about it. So now here we are. We got done with Dr. Dude. Where do we go next? How do we take the science of Dude and the fun of the party theme and my idea, this wild idea of could there be a comic book eventually and all this kind of stuff? So we took it further, and the words you can't see there are talking about taking it past the Wisconsin state line, somewhere between the Wisconsin state line and the back of beyond. And so here's the idea, Blunder, right? I mean, this is crazy. Dennis and I think we're both influenced by early Saturday morning shows like the Thunderbirds and Stingray, because they were just so weird, and they were coming from Great Britain, and it was like you almost had to watch them because they were just too weird, you know. So I took that with me to when we came into Party Zone. Obviously, the Twilight Zone, just the weirdness of everything. British fighter pilots. I mean, I styled Captain Bizarre kind of after a British fighter pilot, and I believe I wanted him to have a British accent, but that never happened. And the Wisconsin state line, you'll see that on the playfield, was important to me as a young man because the drinking age in Wisconsin was 18. So we would, and there was actually a bar in Wisconsin right over the line called Rocket North. So this was a place where a lot of young people would go and party, and so that kind of led into the whole thing. Tin toys. We both, appreciate Japanese tin toys, so the whole rocket design kind of influenced from that. The hole in the ozone layer was beginning to be talked about at that point in time. And, of course, Jimi Hendrix. Why not? This is kind of like the party animal to party zone, the time in between. A lot of things had changed with technology in the game business by then. So we were able to add more music, speech. There was more memory in the game. We added more toys. We added more personality, which can always not always be a good thing. The dot matrix display, I think I mentioned that. The generic cabinet that you see on Party Animals, if there are any out there, at least we were able to dress the cabinet with some great designs after that. And then the robotic comic was kind of a, shows that technology can fail in evolution. But I don't know if you want to add anything about Party Zone. It was a long, strange trip, to say the least.
The thing I really remember about Party Zone is you went back to some very old moldings for just generic plastic parts that were like half of a bumper and things like that, building up that little cottage and stuff.
Yeah, we just used various, because it was cheap, various pinball parts to make other elements out of. The excellent ray was made up of three bumper caps and a post. And, you know, the cosmic cottage, the base was vacuum form, but the top was another bumper cap.
Dennis is really good at looking at existing pieces of things and turning them into new things. So that's kind of his forte. But anyway, we took that to the trade show, and we were up against T2. So you know the results. So by this time, after, you know, we got smashed by T2, the party was definitely over. You know, we had taken it as far as we could take it, and we both came back down to Earth for a rafting theme.
We were partied out by then.
Yeah, it was really over. But Dennis thought, you know, hey, let's do whitewater rafting. That would be cool. And I stuck around long enough to help design the topper. Out of the blue, we had Phil Greer come in. Literally, we were trying to figure out how to make that thing work, and here comes a vendor that just cold called on us and said,
"Well, we didn't even think of the waterfall
we were going to use polar motion.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But it was getting expensive, and there was going to be a motor involved and everything. So right at that point in time, Phil walked in cold calling on us with his method of getting motion from lights, from controlled lights. So we were just amazed, and we put it to good use, and the rest is history on that. I had to unplug from Whitewater. I was planning on doing the artwork for it, but my wife tapped me on the shoulder and said, "We got to go to Disney World with the kids because you've been doing this too long." So we took our trip, and Dennis and Yossi continued the project, and the rest is history. He went on to Indy 500 and Demo Man, and I went on to work with Steve, and that was the end of the party. But then we got back together a little bit later on a project called Scared Stiff. Two things going on here. People in engineering didn't think we should work with Elvira again. People in sales didn't believe in it too much. We kind of had an uphill battle in sales. The timing was bad because we were up against trail games in Europe. So we had to have a back box feature to compete with trail games. So this was an interesting time, both positive and negative. Big layoffs. Dennis lost his job at that point. Very devastating, lost a lot of sleep, and but I think we succeeded in creating a game that was, we wanted to create something that was easier to understand, a little bit kind of what Gary touched on earlier today, something that wasn't quite as deep, something that could appeal to the casual player, and I think we succeeded, and a lot of the great players here will probably think that something like Scared Stiff gets boring, but we did get the carrot in there for the spider bonus and that kind of stuff. So there was we tried to balance it, but we really wanted that game to be a casual player's game. So
we had a lot more money to spend with that game, so that's why you see all the cool molded parts and stuff at that time. When we did Elvira, there wasn't as much money and tooling available, but when we got to Scared Stiff, we did all these molded bone parts and the claw globes, and that was fun, and the ribs for the monster slide.
And we pulled a lot out.
And we took a lot out, too, yeah. Well, that happens with every game.
Right. And here's the picture of our team, minus Cameron Silver. But Mark Wayno, integral part in this team. After the layoffs, he helped get this game to the line, and we appreciate Mark's efforts.
And that's Cassandra, by the way.
And actually, Mark was there when we were coming up with the stiffometer, if I may. He suggested, hey, you did the dudometer back on Dr. Dude. Why don't you bring the stiffometer into this game? It was a great addition to the game. That's it, I think, unless you got more to say about anything. We want to thank Mike and Rob for having us here, and congratulations on 25 years. And to all the collectors and fans of pinball and the talented folks that we've worked with all through the years, you know, thanks again. And that's kind of the story of the party, and we hope to see you soon. So thank you.
One or two questions?
Yeah, two of the things that we know were pulled out of Scare Stick, the skull pile on the movie Mean Monsters. Were there other things that were pulled out of the game?
Yeah, the glowing bones. That was, we were told that would be free, and then when it came time for the molder to actually mold the parts, then it became an extra charge. I don't know. I wasn't there at the end.
It was the LEDs in the skull pile, right?
The LEDs in the skull pile, yeah.
And, yeah.
Skull pile.
No, I think that stayed, didn't it?
I don't know.
The eyeball plunger, that stayed in production, didn't it? No, it did not. All right. Very good. Yeah.
Is there actually ever a Johnny Wolfgang created? Is there one out there somewhere?
There's Johnny B. has one in his basement. At least he did. He's probably sold it by now. But or given it to somebody. But yes, I was there to help install the game in his basement. So, and he was real proud of it because he was going to be inviting executives from NBC to his home for that Christmas. And he was trying to get a job out in California. And maybe it worked because he did get the job out in California. So, yes.
First of all, I love the passages on Party Zone that refer back to.
I would say, I mean, both Mike Boone and Cameron Silver were programmed that game. I would think it probably was Cameron that had a little bit more influence there. I'm not sure. I might be wrong on that. But definitely those two guys worked together on that project. And there's a lot of great shows. I think Cameron kind of focused on the shows and stuff like
the light
that.
Shows.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was a fun part of the game for sure. Anybody else? Thank you.